everybody. I'm trying to make a comment here, but it's not going to work. All right, I am here, and you are here, and I haven't been here in quite some time, and we're talking about a topic that I think is relevant to every human being on this planet, and but here specifically speaking about friendship and what parents can do to help children cultivate healthy, good relationships starting at a young age. I'm doing this in partnership with LEGO Middle East. I have a very special place in my heart for LEGO. My house is full of LEGO, so you know, I do this with all the love in my heart today, because it's just the brand that I'm collaborating with and the topic that I'm speaking about, it's just so close to my heart. So I am here with you talking about this. Now, I have a lot of notes here, so we're gonna get through this in the next 45, 50 minutes. And you guys have questions, you can drop them in the question box and I will tend to them. And I am also very, very happy to see you. Took me a while to get all this set up earlier. But yes, thank you all for being here. All right, so let's just get into it. In the world that we are living in today, the word friend has really just been hijacked, right? That actually people don't know what a friend is. The social media companies have really kind of taken over that word. And of course, as adults with, you know, who were not digital natives, who didn't have social media and in our early years, we had the ability and the, you know, the opportunity to form relationships in those early years, which then led us to be able to do that in our later years as well. But for people and their children that are digital natives, that are moving, I mean, they're being born and raised in the era of social media, the idea of what is a friend is actually a little bit convoluted. They don't know. And I think it is our job to be deliberate and vocal in our instruction. As you guys know, I've always said children do as we do, not as we say, but children also do as we say. So we have to do friendship, and we also have to speak friendship. We have to teach friendship. We have to be conscious about friendship. And sure, they can learn some stuff in school and through the school counselors, but you don't want to leave something this big in the hands of someone else, because it is going to determine how they are in future relationships. And we know from research, one of the longest standing research done, the Harvard Grant study, that the single greatest predictor of happiness, of life happiness, it's not where you work or what your profession is or who's, you know, what type of house you live in. None of that. These things are good and important. But the single biggest predictor is who and how we associate with the people in our lives, and how deep and intimate those connections are, how we are able to have a tribe of our own. Okay, so if we know that, and we know that that's going to lead to happy children and happy people, generally, us also being happy, I'm not going to leave that in the hands of someone else. Okay, so this is the topic that we are talking about today. So the LEGO group actually conducted a study, and it actually warmed my heart to read this study, because kids know this. They know that this is important. And it was a study done focusing on 18,000 children, 6 to 12 years old, in 19 different countries. So this is a pretty big sample, and it's a very diverse sample. And across the board, kids said the same thing. So the majority of the kids talked about how they rely on their friends for comfort to deal with complex emotions. Even as that 6-year-old and that 9-year-old, their emotional worlds are, you know, real, and they're big, and they go to their friends for comfort. And how do I solve this problem? So how do I teach my kid to be that source of comfort for another person? How do I teach them to be a good problem solver so they can help their friends and be a good friend. This is not about just how do you attract good friends, but how do you be a good friend? Because in order for you to have true friends, you have to first learn to be a good friend. And so majority of the kids, 87%, said that they actually rely on their friends. And I want you to think about, like, what would you answer, right? How would you answer that? Also, majority of the kids talked about having fun and being happy as the main elements of their friendship. So they want someone to share their joy with. They want someone to laugh with. They want someone to experience the good times with. Another vast majority talked about that they wanted a diverse group of friends. That's interesting. 19 countries, 18,000 children, they all wanted that it shouldn't just be this kind of, you know, same look, same feel, same culture, same religion, same, you know, whatever, the beliefs. We want people that are different, but we actually don't know how to do that. And so one of the things that they actually said, that a lot of the shows that they watch, they did not teach them how to work through a complex situations on TV shows. So how do you go through a problem with a friend? How do you solve an argument? Or how do you negotiate? How do you work through complex issues? And I'm telling you guys, I've worked with kids in my practice, and I've worked with adults, and I've worked with the senior most people, and leaders, and very, very senior people. I've worked with mothers, I've worked with fathers, I've worked with across the board people. Conflict resolution, conflict management, conflict avoidance is one of the biggest issues we have today. How do I manage my own stuff so I can sit in the face of conflict? I can tell you that this was one of the big things for me also. It's not something that is taught to us. It is, you know, if a parent is telling their child, okay, just go do as I say and don't ask me any questions. Now, that's literally what I'm being taught, you know? And so many of us in this generation have actually not learned to manage conflict because we never had to. No one ever taught us. No one ever negotiated with us. We were just told what to do and it was done. And if we negotiated, we were told off. And so how do we teach our children? And I can see that playing out. Not learning how to set your own boundaries, not knowing your own boundaries, not being able to communicate those boundaries assertively, kindly, gently, clearly, firmly, but not aggressively or passive aggressively. Biggest topic that everybody asks me about is, how do I deal with passive aggressive? What do I do if I'm passive aggressive? And passive aggressive is really, really like something I see all the time in the most sophisticated people. By the way, this is not like people that are not psychologically minded or that have not been in therapy or that have not negotiated great deals within their companies. But passive aggressive, when it comes to being able to name their emotions and being able to communicate that in a way to nurture and heal and repair that relationship, that's not happening. So these are the adults that are in this world. These are the adults that are raising these children. So as I speak to you today, I want you to think about, do I need to learn that, right? This is not about teaching your kids, guys. If you're not doing this in your life, if you are not doing this in your relationship with your children, if you are not self-aware, it ain't gonna happen. It just ain't. And I can tell you that. As I did my dissertation in parenting, and I thought I had it all. Like, I got parenting here. And then I had to learn parenting from the ground up. These kids were my teachers. But I really was quite curious about this whole process. Like, what's going on here? And what am I doing here with these kids? And am I being too forceful? am I being too bossy? So for me, it was really a relationship that I was navigating, not a mothering that I was doing only. Yes, of course, feed them and make sure that they're good and make sure they get to school and make sure they learn their ABCs, but it's a relationship I have now entered. And that relationship is going to have many ruptures. And how am I going to repair that? And how is that going to be a model for them to be able to do that? It's something I constantly am concerned about and I am thinking about, even as my kids are a lot older now, and definitely, especially as my kids are a lot older now. So yes, friendship is important, relationships are important. And if we teach kids about friendships, they know about relationships. And those relationships are going to be the single greatest predictor of happiness as they get older, okay? Learning how to navigate difficulties, not just having a good time, but how do you navigate problems is going to be an important part of those relationships. And what we also know is that we are in a loneliness pandemic. You know, the former US Surgeon General, Dr. Murthy, talked about the loneliness epidemic in the United States, but I can say that across the board in the world. If I gather a whole bunch of teenagers and say, what do you struggle with most? If I gather a whole bunch of adults, what do you struggle with most? They will say it is loneliness. And loneliness is leading to all types of issues like mental health difficulties, anxiety, depression. We were not coded genetically to be alone or feel lonely. Alone, okay, lonely, no. Our survival actually feels threatened. So all types of physical health issues and mental health issues arise as a result of loneliness. And that loneliness also is about, well, how can I have you reach out when you feel lonely? That also is a skill. You don't just jump in and say, hey guys, can I be your friend? Like, how do I navigate being lonely? And then how do I find my way into the world and into a social group where I belong, right? That is also a skill. And we need to teach that starting from an early age. But ask yourself, do you know that? So that's where we're at today. So as I think about relationships, I'm really, really, like if I just bring it all the way down, I'm really talking about emotional intelligence. I'm talking about the four major skills in emotional intelligence: self-awareness, self-regulation, other awareness, also known as empathy, picking it up, and interpersonal skills or social skills. Now, let me say that again: self-awareness, self-regulation, other awareness, and empathy, and social skills. Now that we know that, think about how technology might be interfering with self-awareness, self-regulation, other awareness, and social skills. If I have a phone in front of me and my kid is coming and talking to me, or I have a phone in front of me and I'm eating, and I have a phone in front of me that keeps distracting me as I am with my friend, how aware do you think I am of their experience? And if I have a phone in front of me, and I'm looking, and I'm reading, and I'm doing all the beautiful dopamine things that happen on these phones, if I have all of that in front of me, when am I actually reflecting on myself and my emotions and, you know, I wonder if that had an effect on that person. You know, I said that, but I was running out the door and I think that might have come off a bit rude. Let me message her. Like, when am I actually reflecting? Because there ain't no self-awareness without self-reflection. And there is no self-reflection without space and stillness and a little bit of quietness, and to say, what was that about? What did I do? How did that affect me? Sorry, there's like a fly here. So that's what is emotional intelligence. And the research is showing that our ability to read social cues, our children's abilities, them being able to learn how to have healthy relationships is less than what it used to be. Okay, so we are on a decline here. Less empathy, more self-absorption. Look at me. Look at what I ate. Look at how I dance. Look at what I do. Look at what I bought. Look at who I hung out with. That's it. When their world is so self-oriented, and this is where social media comes in, it is about me. Yeah, sure, community and all of these beautiful things. But in a world of that child whose frontal lobe is not fully formed yet until the age of about 23 or 24, their ability to kind of take perspective and think about things is actually quite compromised until they're older in their teenage years. We have to make sure that we are teaching them this. Instructions, curriculum almost. And what do you think that did? And how do you think they felt? And what do you think that person is feeling? That type of like really pulling them out of themselves and saying, go into this person's shoes now and live life according to their shoes for the next 5 minutes and tell me how they felt. Empathy, right? It is not coming as naturally to children anymore because everything is so self-oriented now. It really is about the self. And how do you like me? And do you follow me? And do you care about me, etc. Okay? So all around the world, if we just think about what it takes to have successful relationships, adult, teen, child, you know, young children, it's the same thing. Okay? And that is one, you've got to know how to regulate your own emotions. We are quite dysregulated as people. We lose it. And as parents, we are quite dysregulated. Quite burnt out, quite exhausted. Oh, I don't want to deal with this. I don't want to do this anymore. Like, just go do whatever. You know, this, not regulated. How regulated are you as a parent? Because your child, especially the younger they go, their nervous systems are not fully formed yet. They seek to you for regulation. And if you are dysregulated and you are anxious and you are feeling quite overwhelmed, that is going to be the dynamic inside of them as well. It is this kind of dynamic that plays out in children. They become that also. So they will either just be, you know, dissociated, or they will be anxious, or they will be scared, and that might be playing out. So not to say that every child that has that has a parent who is that, but it will definitely impact that. But some children come into this world with a very sensitive nervous system, and that nervous system then has to be taught how to regulate. I was one of those children. I had a very sensitive nervous system. And at that time, we didn't have any of this knowledge that we do now, but my teachers just learned to accommodate me. They would, you know, put me in the corner of the room where I would just sort of feel a little bit safer, where it was a little bit quieter, where I would be able to get up and move around, like some of this stuff that I needed to regulate myself. But it wasn't something that was really cultivated or nurtured or taught, like you've got to zip it up. So I learned to dissociate and really move up in my head. But my superpower was here. And I didn't really access that superpower until I was in my 30s, back again, you know, back coming back home. And I'm still working on that. So how do I say, okay, I got a sensitive kid here. I've got a kid who is really explosive or really intense or really shy. Okay, they have a nervous system that needs a little bit more coaching. And I'm going to teach them how to do that. So they're going to know how to regulate their own emotions. That's going to be one of the most important things they're going to need. Okay, number two, how to understand other people's emotions and perspectives. That's empathy. That's thinking that it's not just about me. It isn't just about what I want. And it isn't about, oh, just do what makes you happy. Because that's the majority message that people are getting these days. And what about self-sacrifice in the name of that relationship? And I'm not talking about self-betrayal, but there are times where I'm tired and I'm gonna go visit my mom. Or, oh, I would really just like to just do nothing, but I'm gonna go visit my friend whose mom is sick or who just had a baby. That, in that moment, I am putting my needs and saying, I'm gonna come back to you and I'll tend to you later, but this friend needs me right now and I'm gonna show up for her. This is not about what you need all the time. It is about when you show up for people and what they might need at that time. This is the stuff we need to be teaching our kids, because that is not the message they are getting on social media. I tell you, it is not the message they are getting, because it is all about do what makes you happy. Do what makes you happy. Do what gives you life. Do what gives you spark. And what about what gives other people spark? What are you going to do about that? We're not teaching them that. So we've got to teach them that. Okay? Show sympathy. Feel secure and trusting of other people. You know, in a world where it seems everything is apocalyptic and coming to an end, kids are like, I don't want to go anywhere. I don't want to leave my house. I don't want to trust anyone. You know, everyone seems to be a narcissist in relationships. Your kids are reading that stuff, right? And it's not true, guys. Just because they were your ex or they were your, you know, a friend who betrayed you, then make them a narcissist. So please don't use that language, because it makes your children quite distrustful of trusting anyone in this world. Know how to handle introductions, participate in conversations. How do you listen? How do you converse? You know, when do you interject? When do you say, oh, I really want to add to that? How do you do that? They don't know. They just start talking. It's like, I'm not even looking at you right now. Why are you talking? Oh, it's okay. You don't have to look at me. No. In order for us to have a conversation, I need to finish what I'm saying, and then I need to look at you, and then we need to have that conversation, and then we all need to be paying attention to what you're saying. They don't know these basic rules of conversation. You know, Cheryl Turkle from MIT wrote a book on the lost art of conversation. It's lost to these kids. And I'm talking about all kids, I mean, including mine. It's like, I have to be looking at you in order for you to know that I'm listening. No, no, it's okay. You don't have to look at me. It's okay. I just need to talk. And it's like, no, go talk to your pillow then. I want to listen to you. So please don't interrupt me while I'm here. I want to put this away and then I'm going to look at you and we're going to listen to you. This is what I literally had to say that to my 8-year-old. She's like, no, it's okay. You don't have to look at me. It's like, do you know what listening looks like? It's eyes here, ears here, heart here, body here, phone there. This is listening. I am now listening to you. I'm looking at you. I'm attuned to you. My heart is leaning into you. I'm here with you. This is listening. Oh, wow, that feels good. Yeah, listening is a form of generosity, my love. And this is what it feels like to listen to another person with all of your being. They don't know that. They ain't getting it maybe from their teachers, they're from their friends. How would they know? So this is what we have to do for our children. Teach them that through our being. And how do you apologize and make amends? Ghosting is a thing. Now people just disappear. And when I think about ghosting, I'm like, let me just get into their shoes. Oftentimes they're ghosting you because they cannot tolerate their own guilt and their own shame. So I'd rather just run away from all of this. How convenient. I cannot manage this conflict. Ghost. It's a thing. And so how do I teach you? And when you make a mistake, you've got to go own that mistake. And even if that means that you don't reconcile that relationship, but you've got to make amends. You've got to make amends through your own energy, right? For your own energy. Because what you put out, girl, is going to come back to you. And so how are you going to put good out? And how are you going to make amends and end things well, even if that means there's an ending here, rather than just disappear out of that? And how do you not talk badly about someone who's no longer in your life? These are things that they are not learning, because we are not being that. How good was your last ending? How do you talk about people that were part of your life journey that might have betrayed you, that might have hurt you in some way? Is it with compassion and forgiveness? Because that's the next thing on that list. Or is it with this kind of like, oh, I hope you know? That's what we're teaching our children. So these are some of the basic skills, 101, that you need in order to have good relationships with people. Forgiveness, understanding, making amends, apologizing, cooperation, negotiation, compromise, security, trust, sympathy, empathy, self-sacrifice, service, which is another word for self-sacrifice often. This is what we need. And this is what we want to teach our children. And this is what we want to be practicing in our life. And this is when I think about, you know, when I think about what my children taught me, because I really truly believe this, and what working with children taught me, they taught me to be better. Because I knew that they would be what I am rather than what I talk. And how do I be better in front of them? And hopefully through that, they will be better. And they will make me better. And I will be inspired by them, and they will be inspired by me. And then the world will be a better place. So this is this is what we're after here, okay? So what can we do? So here we go into the next part of the talk. So one is show your children this kind of warmth and respect. This threats and blackmail and, you know, the things we do to kids. Don't do that, because that's how they're going to show up. When you say, like, you know what? You must not love me because you're not eating your food. What? Like, why? I just don't want to eat this food. But this kind of like emotional blackmail that sometimes we engage in because we're just desperate. Don't do it. And there are so many times, and I've spoken to my therapist about it, they're like, I really want to just pull it out because it just like, I can't believe you're being this selfish, and I can't believe like this kind of name calling. Don't do it, because that's really a algorithm we're teaching them for a relationship, a relational algorithm. When they don't do what you want, use emotional blackmail, and maybe you will get what you want. Literally, that is what we're teaching them. Instead of being curious and being wondering or making, that's their boundary. I can't eat anymore. Okay. You know what? I trust that you know your body, so it's okay, you don't have to eat anymore. You can save that for leftovers for tomorrow. Like, you trust my boundary here. Obviously, I'm saying that with consideration if the kid is not eating at all. I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about sometimes the kids are just being that. But you think about when you start using names and you're being so selfish and you only think about yourself, like this kind of language, no. We've got to show them respect. They are like, imagine that there's like a 45-year-old and that 4-year-old. And how would you talk to that 45-year-old? You would do it with a lot more patience. You would do it with a lot more consideration. You would do it with a lot more respect. You would do it with a lot more curiosity. This is how we're going to deal with that. Okay. And that does require a lot of energy. This is why you've got to have energy as a mother and a father. As a caregiver, this is why you have to make sure that you are doing your work and having good boundaries in place, because you've got to show up full time for this thing that you've called motherhood and fatherhood and parenthood and caregiving. It's really not easy. So this kind of punishments and shaming and blaming, we don't want this. We don't want this as part of the parental dynamic. You know, logical consequences, not punishment. when you do that, so when they come and they tell you, Mama, I just, you know, I said something bad to my friend. Okay, so inside of me, I'm like, oh, like, why? How? What are they gonna think? And now they're gonna go tell their mother, and now their mother is gonna call me. Like, inside of me, all of that is going on. But hold, hold, steady, steady, soothe, soothe. You see that? Self-regulation, self-regulation, self-awareness, all those thoughts that I just mentioned. Oh my God, the mother's gonna call me. She's gonna think I'm such a bad mother. It's probably because I'm a working mother, and they're gonna think I'm not present with my children, and that only the nanny is raising them, and blah, blah, blah. All those thoughts, that's self-awareness. Self-regulation is hold steady and blink so they don't see you just going like this, and breathe, breathe, and say, okay, tell me what happened. And now you start talking to that child. You see how that's a little bit different than you just losing it? So how is emotional intelligence important for parents? It's very, very important. This brings me to the second point, which is you've got to be an emotions coach. You can't be a coach unless you know the game. And the game is emotions. Do you know you have an emotional vocabulary? Or is it sad, mad, happy, bad, glad? That's it. Right? Imagine if that's like, there's thousands and thousands of words to describe emotions. How big is your vocabulary? And we know from research, the more granular you are in your emotional vocabulary, the more able you will be to regulate those emotions when they show up. So you will not only know panic, but you will know jittery, and you will know nervous, and you will know uncomfortable, and you will know worried, concerned, all these words of worry before you hit panic. But if you only know anxious and panic, then you're not going to pick it up when it's a little bit earlier. So the more words you know, the more your brain knows how to pick it up. It's awesome. Do the research, guys, on emotional granularity. So how many words do you know? And do you know what it feels like as a visceral experience of those words? Do you know what concern feels like versus jittery in your body, right? This is what we want to teach our children. So being an emotion coach is going to be very, very important. And biggest part of that is going to be an emotional vocabulary and emotional regulation, social skills development, which brings me to my third point, which is teach them how to do mind reading. I know, like, I'm just being a little bit like, you know. But what do you think he felt? What do you think he was thinking? What do you think she was feeling? You can even do this as a game in the park, and you see these kids playing. What do you think she's feeling right now? What do you think she's thinking right now? Someone drops their ice cream. How do you think she's feeling right now? What are the different thoughts that could be going on through her head? You break something. Oh my God, how do you think I'm feeling right now? Teach them. Push them outside of themselves and say, well, I wonder. Look at all the things that are happening in the world. Do not expose them to those images, but there's a lot of pain in the world. And how do you think it feels when you no longer have a house? And how do you think it feels when you feel cold in the winter and you don't know where you're gonna get your next meal from? Let them feel it. Don't do it before bedtime. Do it earlier in the day, because we don't wanna activate that before bed and interrupt their sleep. But teaching them empathy through these types of scenarios is going to be very, very important. And it is something that has to be nurtured. Not every kid, we have, all as human beings, we have the ability to empathize, but it is something that can go a little bit silent unless we practice, like, you know, use it or lose it type of thing. So we've got to use it. And in the world we're living in, it ain't kind of happening all the time, because there's a phone in front of our face or there's a tablet in front of our face, and that's not being activated. And I'm telling you that if I have a phone in front of me that I'm sort of looking at, I'm telling you, as a therapist, as a mother, you are not attuned to the other person. And when you are not attuned, and when that phone is somewhere else and you are attuned to the other person, the empathy you feel, the compassion you feel is on another level. It will melt your heart. It will touch your soul when you sit with another being and engage with them in an attuned way. This phone is disrupting that attunement process. And just through my attunement, just with you being with me fully, I can regulate your nervous system. I don't have to say a word. It's called co-regulation. And I can be with you. This is why it's the greatest form of generosity, is to be with another human being with your whole being. Sorry, guys. There's a thing here. So teaching them different faces, you know, these feelings charts and these feeling words, all of these things are going to be an important way for them to consider context and consider facial expression, consider how they feel, how they think. This is a third thing about, and which is linked to being an emotions coach. Number four, another part of being, you know, teaching them social skills and friendships and stuff is going to be teach them crucial conversation skills. Like, I'm looking at my kids, right? I'm not even looking at anyone else's kids. I'm just looking at my kids. And I'm saying, listen, when I'm not looking at you, I'm not listening to you. So like, I have to know, this is how you have a conversation. This is how you introduce yourself. This is how you wait for another person to finish before you talk. This is how you say, excuse me, if you want to say something. This is what you say when you interrupt someone. Oh, I'm sorry for interrupting. These are skills, guys. Conversation skills, meaning they're not born with them. They have to be taught, like driving skills, right? It's just because you can talk does not mean you know how to converse. We've got to teach them these skills. And I actually don't know what's happening in school, because that teacher is really overwhelmed, right? And teachers are really overwhelmed, right? And so how do we do that? So how do we have them not have it be just this kind of question and answer or interrogation, or you're being in a conversation, you know, hog, you're just taking over and you're not really asking people questions. You're not really wondering about other people. It's just about you and what you want to say. So how do we teach them that? That's going to be important. And you guys can find all types of resources online on introducing, and then listening, and then what's your body language? I'm sitting like this. What am I communicating to you? Whatever, right? Like, how do you lean in, and how do you listen, and how are you curious, and what's an open body language? What's a closed body language? What's a dismissive body language? And this is the stuff we've got to teach our kids, especially the young ones, but even the teenagers. And you know, I've noticed that teenagers, when you say something to them, this doesn't happen with my kids because they're not allowed to have phones in this kind of, we don't have phones in our when we're hanging out. But what happens when someone says something to upset you? Because we're not woke. This is what happens with teenagers, right? I feel like I'm offending them every time I open my mouth. Like, there's something that I'm saying that's probably offending them on some level. And these are the kids these days. And so like, okay, I might have offended you, but there is space for me in this conversation. Because honey, there's going to be a lot of offensive people in this world if you think I'm offensive. And so how are you going to regulate yourself in that conversation for you to be able to continue to have that conversation and to make a meaningful impact within that conversation? So let's just say I am offensive. What do you do next? This is what they do. When you're offensive, they just, you're out, I'm not listening to you anymore, and forget you. No. You don't just get to delete people or just, you know, zone out of conversations that you are in. This is the stuff that is unconsciously, subconsciously being inputted into their psyches through social media. That if I don't like something you say, I can just block you. If I don't like something you say, I can just delete you. And by the way, I'm all for that if those people are being aggressive. But I'm just saying, it doesn't. How is that playing out in real life? You can't just block people. I'm your mother. So how are you going to make space for me to have my own opinion as I make space for you to have yours? I'm curious about your opinion. Can you be curious about mine? Right? It bothers me because kids these days, really, they want to say something to you, but they don't have any space to hear anything that you have to say. But I would say to parents, are you curious or are you being judgmental? Like, you guys, if you're doing, you guys, then they have every right to say, you guys to you. You've got to make space to hear their perspective. Like, where did that come from? And how is that playing out? And how is that being discussed in your school? And how is that playing out in your relationship set? Like, curious. I want to know. You know, I was always fascinated by this kind of youth culture. And so I really enjoyed working with teens when I used to work with teens, because I was like, it's a world that I really want to know. And I studied anthropology in my undergrad, so I've always just been curious about other cultures. But this youth culture, subcultures, are cultures. And these little kids we have, they have their own little culture. And so how do we be curious? Because then they're going to be curious about us. But if you're dismissive and judgmental, then they're going to be curious and judgmental and dismissive about you. And then there's no influence, and then there's no impact, and then there's no conversation, and then there's no things going back and forth, no values being exchanged. Then it's just them their way and you your way, and that's not how we want to be with our children, at least. The next thing I would say, number 5, is to host activities that encourage cooperation and not competition, especially if your kids are having difficulties with social skills. Okay, so I'm all for healthy competition, and I think we need more of that in this world, and we need to build resilient children that are able to compete, and there's a winner and a loser. Well, not a loser, but a winner and like a person who's not a winner. But loser has become such a hijacked word also. But you know, you lost, and there is a basketball game. Those guys won and you lost. And make you a loser, but you did lose, and it's okay to be upset about it. But you know, giving everybody trophies and giving everybody, okay, we're not doing that. But we do want to engage in healthy cooperation, healthy cooperative activities. And this is, you know, this is something we did in, I think I might have even posted about it, when teens, actually our teen boys, got together and they bought Lego sets this winter break, and they built these Lego sets together. He was working on this part, he was working on this part, but they're all building this thing together, and it was like one of these massive things, you know, that you build. And so that's cooperative. There's no competition here. But in sports there's competition, and in other places there's competition, and we cannot keep our kids away from that. And it's, I think it's okay to validate that, you know, you lost and you're sad, and that means it means something to you, and you're just going to come at it a little bit harder next time and a little bit better next time, and you're going to practice more next time, and that's okay. So teaching them how to lose gracefully is also important, but also showing them that they're upset because it meant something to them. I can tell you, I learned most from my losses than I did from my failures, from my mistakes, from those experiences than I did from my wins. So this helped me build a muscle, not that. And so we actually take a lot away from our children when we don't allow them to experience losses. and we don't allow them to experience what it feels like to not have won everything. Oh, but you know, you're a winner. No, no. He won and you lost, and that's okay. And we need to be able to teach them that. That's what resiliency looks like. And no, you didn't do well. How do you think you did well? How do you think you did? And if they say, well, I don't think I did well, what makes you think you didn't do well? Well, this happened, and I didn't practice as enough, and I probably should have. Okay, so you didn't do your best. Next time, learn from these things that you just mentioned, and then show up differently. These experiences are great teaching places, and that's what an emotion coach does. The next thing is to handle awkward situations. How do you handle awkward situations? Oh no, they don't know. And most adults don't know. You know, if two people are playing, how do I come and say, I wanna play with you and I want to join this? You know, how do you do that in a way that is engaging? So if two kids are playing, you know, what can you do to fit in? Could you add to the game? If two kids are playing Lego, could you say, well, can I help build one part of it versus just coming in and taking over? Or can you ask them, can I join the game rather than, well, can we play a different game? You know, sometimes kids don't know these things. So we've got to teach them how do you handle an awkward situation? Let's teach them that. Another thing is conflict resolution, which I spoke a lot about at the front of the talk. If I could take every single experience that I have had in my personal and professional life about where things have been hurtful, things have just been painful, things have been unnecessarily damaging to a relationship, it has all been because that person did not know how to manage the conflict inside of them. And they did not know how to show up and do something when they felt upset. So it's not just conflict resolution between me and you, there's a conflict, but there's an inner conflict that happens inside of us. And how do I manage that? How do I manage that I no longer want to be in this relationship or friendship, but I want to leave it with love rather than just being passive aggressive and not showing up to dinners or not showing up? Like, how do you do that, right? There's a conflict in me. So these are things we've got to teach our kids. Negotiation, compromise. You know, there's a compromise square, and like if they're fighting over what movie they want to watch, or if they're fighting over what game they want to play, or they're fighting over where we're going to go on the weekend, like there's ways that you can, one, creatively solve that problem, so there's a win-win. One person gets what they want and the other person doesn't get what they want. The other person gets what they want and you don't get what you want, or nobody gets what they want. These are the four different ways that this thing can play out. I get something, you get something. I get something, you get nothing. You get everything, I get nothing, and neither of us get something. So which one are we gonna choose here? That's compromise, the formula. And then teaching them, okay, well, maybe we can order pizza, but I can choose the topping. Or maybe we can watch this movie and next time I can pick. Or maybe we can go to the beach, but we have to do a family activity as building a sandcastle versus like burying someone like into the sand. Like, this is how we teach our children. You've got four options here. Which one are you gonna pick? Win-win is probably the best one. That's negotiation and compromise. That comes a little bit easier when you have siblings because you've got to negotiate. But that can also happen when you have play dates and things of that sort. Number eight, which is so important, express remorse and make amends. Don't just say sorry. make it better. How are you gonna make it better? You just broke something of hers. What are you gonna do? You're gonna save your money and buy her a new one. You're gonna take your allowance and get her something different. You hurt her feelings. How are you gonna make it better? I'm gonna invite her over. We're gonna do her favorite thing. Something. You've got to make amends. It's not just apologize. Apologize and make amends. Most adults don't know how to do that. Most adults are like, well, whatever, I'm not. I apologize to my kids all the time. All the time. When I say something hurtful, or when I say something a little bit edgy, or when I am being, you know, running out the door and not really paying attention, like these types of things. You know, I was like, that didn't feel good to you, and I'm really sorry. I was in such a hurry, and I should have stopped, and I should have, you know, listened to what you needed to say, and I'm sorry about that. And it's a small thing. It's not, I don't make a big thing of it. And there are times where my teenagers have really pushed me, and I've just been like, you know, I'm really done with this. And then I say something mean, or I'm not really mean, but edgy. Edgy, like, oh, I'm so frustrated, I don't want to do it. I raise my voice, and so, or I walk out or something. This is going to happen in real relationship. And my relationship with them is a real one. I'm a real human being with real issues, with real problems, with real pressures. And this is what it feels like to be in a response, in a relationship that is real. I've got to teach them that. It's not all rosy and good. I lose it. And now how do I fix it? I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. I take full ownership for that. And not, I'm sorry, but you really make me angry sometimes. No, that is not an apology. I'm sorry. I take full ownership for me losing my cool. And I'm gonna do a better job of regulating myself before I enter this house, because I came in edgy. And I apologize. Well, that's it. I'm gonna do better next time. That's it. The next one is to encourage your children to be understanding and forgiving of other people's mistakes. You know, kids can be forgiving, but not naturally often. And sometimes it can be even vindictive, or mistrusting, or I don't want to be her friend anymore, and I'm gonna block this person, and I don't, no, let's work through this a little bit. Let's talk about that. This person has been in your life for, you know, 2 years. You guys have really good times together. Let's talk this through. And not to say that they won't end that relationship, but this, not with this vindictiveness and this kind of resentment and this aggression. With an understanding that we are just two different people that are walking on two different paths now. And we walk together for a certain time in our life, and we are no longer walking on that path together because our values are just not aligned anymore. Our interests are not aligned anymore. Very different, right? Forgiveness and compassion rather than this kind of like resentment and anger and this energy of like, well, she's, you know, whatever, fill in the blank. Not necessary. So forgiveness, compassion, how do we do that? Teach them that even when they're, you know, even endings can be beautiful for kids, young and teenagers. And then also monitor their social life. You know, watch them in their play dates. I don't have the luxury, I guess I should say, or the honor to be able to see that a lot, you know, going to my daughter's park or having play dates. I get to see moments of these, and not all the time because I'm working, but I do make a point that I'm gonna go see her in the park these days, or I'm gonna see her with her friends these days. And I just watch the dynamic, because this is where you see what she needs to work on, what she needs to stand up for, how she could be a better friend. And I noticed that you did that, and that was so kind. This is where we highlight to them also the things they're doing well, and also the things that we might be coaching them on. But also, who are they hanging out with? because eventually that also is going to be teaching them. They learn through their social experiences. And oftentimes kids can be hanging out with people that are just maybe not a good influence, and they are mean, and they're saying things that are not nice. And how do we teach them what is a true friend versus that someone you're just attracted to and you want validation from, or you want approval from? And what is a true friend? Is it a mutually beneficial relationship? That also is something we've got to monitor, because there are kids who are very drawn to people in power. These, you know, girls and boys that are in a place of power, and it can almost be a bullying or unhealthy type of relationship, because she's the popular one, or he's the, you know, something, and those kinds of relational issues really show up in girls more than in boys. That's why I was like, maybe. In boys, it doesn't play out as much, but relational bullying happens in girls far more than in boys, where they invite this girl and then they won't invite that girl, and then they'll talk about that birthday party, but they won't be, you know, that type of complex stuff. Like, we've got to work that through, and teaching her that, you know what, if someone is doing that, then maybe you don't want to have that person in your life, because a good friend would not do that. Teaching them early, because relational bullying, I'm telling you, it's happening in adults too. And it's really not cool. Where, you know, people post about the party they went to, but then you weren't invited to that party. It's happening. And it's not nice. And it's not kind. And it's not considerate. And these are the values we want to teach our children. So I hope that this talk was helpful to you guys. Thank you, LEGO Middle East, for highlighting such an important topic. And they are going to be launching a new series of their YouTube show, LEGO Friends. And I encourage you guys to watch that with your children, especially the younger ones. And I know these really open up a platform for you to have conversations about, well, how could she have done that differently, or how would you have felt, and how do you think he felt? Everything I spoke about, those types of shows are a great conversation starter and a great way for you to have those learning moments with your children. So I encourage you guys to look for that on YouTube. And I encourage you guys, for you as adults, as parents, to be better friends to the people in your life, to be in service of your community, which so needs heroes, and you can engage that heroic imagination inside of yourself and be a hero in your community, and to be the person that you want your children to be that to them, so that they can grow up to be like you, and so they can inspire you to be better. Thanks guys for being with me today, and it was really good to be with you guys, and I really look forward to being with you again. Bye.